Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. And with me, as always, is Fred, who can't believe he actually watched a week of TV. Moreland, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. That sure was a week of TV. Had some ups and also, this may shock you, some downs.
Yeah, it was definitely a week of television, and we'll have plenty to say about that. But I think we need to start off the show talking about the biggest news item of the week, and that is Rey Fénix kind of going AWOL. And it's really interesting that how he kind of went about this, because it wasn't too dissimilar to some of the complaints that CM Punk had after his exit from the company. But it's also odd because AEW seems to have a pretty straightforward medical policy where you can get treated by your own doctor and you just kind of go through AEW to, like, you know, get it taken care of. You know, I believe I'm correct in that. And to hear...
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah, multiple people say, hey, I couldn't see a doctor. Well, something isn't adding up here, whether it be they are being told no, which I don't see. Like, look, I don't think the cons necessarily run the greatest businesses in the world, but that doesn't seem too likely. But it also, from the perspective of the wrestlers, what benefit do they have in lying here? And I think that's where a lot of the intrigue comes into this, Fred.
Yes. It's just kind of a messy situation. And of course, Tony Khan isn't going to comment on it. I think that doesn't really shock anyone, given that what would he really benefit from that? And then you get into the weird, like, oh, I'm commenting on a injury stuff thing. That it's always kind of weird. You know, it's not very surprising, I think, at all that we're just kind of going to get the, you know, a little bit from Fénix's side. And then you had the podcaster I honestly hadn't heard of before do their, you know, what very much seemed like a leak from either Fénix or someone close to Fénix. It's just kind of like, all right, well, this is a thing we're doing, I guess. So it's just a very... silly situation, really, when you get down to it. I think, you know, it's very hard to kind of suss out exactly what the deal is with, like, the doctor situation. Because, again, you're not going to hear from AEW on that. And is it possible that, like, someone with AEW dropped the ball with telling Fénix they have to go see a doctor of his own choosing, or that alternatively he has to submit the bill to AEW for reimbursement? Yeah, we just had a little story in the past couple weeks about Anthony Green, I think it was, where I think Deadlock Pro helped him with the cost of his broken jaw. It may have been a different indie company. I forget the details on that. But it's just kind of like, well, you know, what's going on here? I don't know. This may shock some people, but it seems like maybe AEW isn't the tightest run organization under the sun.
Color me shocked, Fred.
My goodness, can't believe it.
I can't believe the billionaire does not have a properly run organization. It's almost like we could have seen this coming.
It's even funnier in hindsight when you consider, you know, the fairly infamous Taz promo about how they don't run a sloppy shop. And it's rather unfortunate in hindsight that that was, you know, that may be one of those like little things that will haunt the company. I don't know. It's just really dumb. It's a dumb situation. It sounds dumb. I'm tired of it. It's dumb. And this company keeps finding its way. It's like Sideshow Bob with the rakes. It's keep finding it a way to step on the rakes. And then you go, then turns around, steps on another rake. You know, all that. Like, I just feel like that's where we are with this. And another example of that is the second story on our list. What a transition. I am the king of transitions, just flawless as ever. But where basically they have the situation with Willie Mack, the most important person to AEW, Willie Mack, has been pulled from a GCW booking under somewhat murky circumstances. You know, the big situation there, of course, is that Effie has gone out of his way to trash Tony Khan rather personally on his podcast. I haven't talked about it previously because it's just a really dumb story, but it's going to escalate, so I guess we got to talk about it. One of the things Effie has said is that Tony Khan basically has been put into the sports analytics role so that he's away from his father's businesses because he's an idiot, according to Effie, which I think is like completely evidence free, you know. For some reason Tony Khan didn't appreciate that. So first Ricky Starks has been pulled from GCW, and then Willie Mack may or may not have been pulled. This could just be a circumstance of him feeling awkward about it. Willie Mack did say he talked to Christopher Daniels, and Daniels told him to back out of the GCW booking he had. Now the question is that Daniels as whatever, you know, director of talent relations or whatever his title is in AEW saying that, or is it like Daniels giving advice outside of that role? It's kind of unclear. And it's also a situation where I could easily see it being very murky about which role he's speaking from. Just so we're all on the same page about Willie Mack. Now, I love Willie Mack. I think he's a very entertaining worker. He's a good wrestler. I would like it if we had more Willie Mack at AEW. He's a cool worker. But in 2024, he has had 3 AEW matches, and they were either in January or March, nothing else. And then he's been on Ring of Honor 4 times. And it's kind of like, well, why can't the dude just work the GCW shows? Like, people mostly forget he's an AEW guy, I think, really. So it's just a kind of messy situation. And I kind of have this feeling that there's a possibility that this is all a work, because you got Matt Cardona coming in to work this Ring of Honor main event kind of randomly against Chris Jericho. And it begs the question, is there going to be a Ring of Honor GCW cross promotion feud? Actually, is that where we're heading with this? I don't think there's any real indication yet, but it's a thought I've had. Would it be the craziest thing in the world? I don't think it'd really add much excitement for me, but it's a possibility. It's on the table. So I don't know, man. It's dumb. It's just really dumb. This stuff's dumb.
Very dumb. And so answer me this, Fred, because I'm genuinely trying to figure it out. Is Matt Cardona a contracted GCW wrestler, or does he just work GCW?
I think he just works GCW. I'm kind of under the impression that the only contract GCW's publicly acknowledged was the Nick Gage one from a few years ago. I know that Cardona is a central figure to GCW, but I don't know that he's actually like under any kind of written contract. It doesn't mean he isn't. I just am not aware of it offhand.
Yeah, because I think that's a really interesting one to try and parse out and try to figure out, okay, are you in a good spot where you can kind of do this? That one is really interesting to me. But how are you going to do a GCW, ACW, or AEW kind of feud?
It's a Ring of Honor. My guess would be a Ring of Honor specifically, because they do seem to be trying to do something to heat up the Ring of Honor brand with Jericho as champion, and there's been these light rumors that they're going to get finally a Ring of Honor TV deal, that we're also still waiting on that third AEW TV deal to finally be announced, you know, with Fox, that got talked about for a while and then kind of dissipated. I don't know.
Dog, who knows, man? This is such a weird deal. I say the word dog and Odie is napping right next to me. He's like, what? No, not everything is about you, I promise.
Should be. I'd rather talk about Odie than most of this AEW news, to be honest.
You and me both. I kind of want to circle back to this Phoenix story for a second.
Because,
sure. Like, we kind of got all the GCW stuff, and I think we're, as you mentioned, we're going to find out more and more as we kind of see what ends up happening with some of this Ring of Honor stuff. I think Final Battle could be an incredibly newsworthy show for some of these reasons. They're obviously in Hammerstein. There is a frustration from the GCW side. Matt Cardona is going to be headlining at Hammerstein a month before headlining it again for the other company, which, look, if you just kind of look at this from an agnostic perspective, that's a fair beef. Like that's a fair, like, a frustration point where,
I mean, they could have, like, negotiated in exclusivity, you know.
You know, I'm not saying that they're 100% in the right. I'm saying, like, if you're GCW, man, that sucks. But it's also like nobody's really done anything wrong. Matt Cardona, by all reports, has not sent any kind of signal where he's done bad by GCW, where he's done anything like poorly. He seems to be handling everything professionally behind the scenes. We've heard nothing else of the sort. So, you know, assumptions be damned. Like, there's no issues there. But from like a talent perspective, from like Effie complaining about it, like, I kind of understand it. I understand where they're coming from. It's a point of frustration. Maybe I didn't kind of frame it properly when I initially started the conversation, but if you're GCW, I can completely understand, like, hey, this kind of sucks. But no, like, AEW and Cardona didn't do anything wrong. It's just one of those things. It just kind of sucks. Maybe you should have had the foresight to be like, hey, Cardona, don't headline Hammerstein the month before you're about to do it with us. Like, and it just kind of shows that GCW is just not this A-plus kind of organization where they have this kind of foresight and are, like, it really feels like an underground kind of operation where they just feel like it's us against the world, which is the mentality they should have going into their Hammerstein show. Last year's
The name of the show is literally GCW versus the world, or the people versus GCW, I think. Also, a book for that show is Cardona versus Effie. So another thing to do the Brian Windhorst fingers with.
Are you sure? I thought it was Effie versus Alley Catch.
This is that's what Meltz has in this week's Observer. So
interesting, because I would have sworn it was Effie versus Alley Catch on that show, because obviously Bussy did the breakup and then if I'm Effie,
you're right because Cage Match has it listed as Catch versus Effie, so.
Yeah, because it's their big show of the year, and that's mm-hmm. their biggest feud right now. So I'm just going to be intrigued to kind of see how all this plays out. But as I was trying to do, circling back to the Phoenix thing, just when CM Punk said all the medical stuff, okay, it's CM Punk. This happened right after Brawl Out. You can imagine that it might have been hard to get in touch with the right people in the company. And not to give AEW a pass, but you can kind of understand how something like that might have ended up not being handled as promptly as possible. You know, AEW is still at fault, but you can at least think about, okay, I can understand how something like that might have happened. Now you fix it, you move on, you make sure it doesn't happen again. Okay. That's, you know, just how you run a proper business. But then this Phoenix stuff comes out, and now you have to really question yourself and see, like, is there a lot of smoke to this fire? Is this now becoming a trend? Because the Punk thing is 2 years old by this point. He got injured All Out 2022 in that match with Jon Moxley. Brawl Out happens as I'm sitting in the front seat of a car with Jack Beckman and Jeff Andrews in line at McDonald's. I'll never forget that. Shout out to those guys. I think Jerry might have been in there too, but yeah, we were in line at McDonald's, and it was just bonkers to kind of realize that, hey, Punk's going AWOL. But that seemed to be an isolated incident. I have concern that it's not an isolated incident. Are we going to maybe see other people kind of speak about their quote-unquote treatment in AEW down the line? I don't think we can say with any kind of certainty that this is a story that's over. I think Phoenix went about this in the wrong way, considering, dog, you're still under contract. You're being an idiot. But this is like a kind of put on the bookshelf, keep it open, and see what happens here.
Also, let's be clear. It really sucks that Ray Phoenix is going to be on the shelf for about a year, supposedly, because of the contract situation. Because Ray Phoenix is an extremely good pro wrestler, and I'd much rather have him wrestle than, you know, not. So, especially when it's a situation where he could just be wrestling, but, you know, Tony Khan doesn't like using people on the tail end of their deals that they aren't going to renew, so...
Yeah, it's just interesting, and I think we should keep our kind of eyes and ears open for all of this stuff, because there's a lot of intricacies here. Let's kind of move on. I'm sure we'll get more of the GCW stuff as we kind of get closer to both Final Battle and the GCW People versus the World. For Brian Alvarez, Killswitch is doing much better, working towards a comeback. Considering where he was a couple of weeks ago when we talked about him, great news. Holy crap, is that great news. Juice Robinson has surgery on his broken fibula on the 9th. Dave Meltzer said it was successful. Also great to hear. Broken fibula, I'm guessing he's out a minimum of 3 months. Depending on the severity of the break and depending on where the break was, how... Considering he needed surgery, that tells you he needed some like screws or a plate of some sort in order to kind of get the bone in with the healing process. But good news there. Speaking of Juice Robinson, well, actually, we'll talk more about Toni Storm, but she's set to return in the wrestling ring tonight, December 13th on Rampage. That'll be cool. Adam Copeland has been nominated for a Children's and Family Emmy for his role as Arias in Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Man, Fred, if you would have told me that an AEW wrestler would have been nominated for an Emmy before before a WWE wrestler, I would have been shocked. But here we
are. Yeah. As someone who watched that show, I'm also a little shocked. But yeah, it was a pretty good show. I thought that Adam was all right on it, I reckon. Better than Money Plane. It's not like a real, if you will, Emmy. It's one of their side categories for children's programming, but it's still an Emmy. So,
yeah, an Emmy is an Emmy, and I don't think anybody's going to complain about that. This is an interesting one, Fred. Per the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Full Gear is up 3.7% on TV buys versus WrestleDream. If I recall correctly, TV buys is the majority of pay-per-view buys?
I think so. I'm not sure offhand, but that sounds right to me.
Hey, being up versus WrestleDream, I think, is huge, considering where this company is currently at. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, we'll see how it shakes out. It is a little suspect that the last couple pay-per-views, we haven't heard much with regards to numbers, but still, yeah.
Tony Khan was asked about a second video game, and he took the opportunity to talk about how the first one is available and still being expanded. The last downloadable content DLC was July 10th with the release of Tournament Mode and Jay White. Look, this is kind of how some of these things are. Unless it's a yearly release kind of game, you're going to get a lot of the DLC stuff, and then you'll get one down the line. But hell, Grand Theft Auto is still one of the most popular. Grand Theft Auto 5 is still one of the most popular games in the world, and it came out in 2013. That's obviously the odd one here. Call of Duty does a release every single year. You obviously have your yearly releases like Madden, MLB The Show, but it sounds like they're not going to go like the WWE 2K route and have one every single year, which, considering how the first one went, that might not be the worst idea.
Yeah, but they also, I'm not really sure how much more they're releasing for this game, so I don't know. There's also was that talk from a few months ago, I think it was, that they were looking for possibly not developing with Ukes for the next title, so hard to say where that relationship is, but yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of relationship, Big Bill and Lexi Nair got married on my birthday, December 7th. Both are off TV, probably because they're on a honeymoon. When I read that they got married, I learned that Lexi Nair was the stepdaughter of Diamond Dallas Page. Did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for them. I wish them a lot of happiness and success. And Big Bill has obviously had quite the journey over the last few years, and it's great to see him continue to move forward in a positive light. Getting married rules. Yeah. Staying married, well, we'll see. That usually rules, but it's up to the individual person.
Yeah, it's never easy. It's always every relationship takes work.
Yep, even the relationship I have with my dog. Sorry, I'm not married to my dog. I have a wife. I was just making a joke about Odie. That could have been bad. Anyways, let's talk about this show, Fred. And interesting show. It definitely happened. Some good, some weird. I want to start with Jon Moxley.
Okay.
I found it absolutely fascinating that he said Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah.
I don't know why he said it, and that's why I'm so fascinated by it. We know how much Jon Moxley hates WWE, hates their canned bullshit, hates the vernacular. But then he used it. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious. What made me extra curious about it is how Excalibur, right afterwards, did not use the words Fatal 4-Way, called it a 4-Way match, which is how AEW has called it ever since the company began. That's how the announcers have always utilized it. Jim Ross sometimes will kind of use the WWE vernacular, but to a point you can kind of let that slide with Jim Ross because he was with that company in heavy roles, not only as a broadcaster, but backstage for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
But I found it very interesting that Mox used it, especially with this new gimmick with the Death Riders.
I don't know how much to read into it. I'm kind of leaning towards not very much, but, you know, I mean, he was also in WWE for quite a bit, so it seems unlikely that, you know, I would probably chalk it up just to a slip of the tongue than anything else, but, you know, it's not giving me the, they're doing like 4D booking here. That's just kind of my read on it.
And I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, I think this is that they're doing that either. But I just found it really interesting that he used it. And I have no idea if it's a slip of the tongue. I have no idea if it was supposed to be in there or if it wasn't. Just him using it was fascinating to me. Whatever that ends up being, whatever underlying cause or whatnot, I'm going to keep an eye on this. And I'm going to just keep it, not at arm's length, but just try to understand, hey, this is what happened. This is what's going on. Why did Moxley use this? Honestly, it was probably just a slip of the tongue, because when you're in a company for so long, sometimes just things get lodged in your brain and they just come out at random times. Now, that's not just something talking about, you know, pro wrestling. If you're with a company long enough, in any realm of work, that can happen to you. I still get server nightmares for getting a side of ranch to a table. Like, those are a real thing. Like, I'm just so curious if it was a bunch of nothing or if it's something. And if it's something, what is that something? I'm probably reading way too much into it, and I'll admit it.
I think so. I think you are.
But it's Jon Moxley using the vernacular, not Mercedes Moné, not even like Claudio Castagnoli, not even someone like Will Ospreay. It's just fascinating. That's all.
I thought this was honestly the worst show of the three of the past week. I thought Rampage actually was great this for once. That had I had 3 4-star matches on it for the Continental Classic with Okada Briscoe, Ricochet Commander, which I think is the best match of the Continental so far. I thought that was fantastic, 4.5 stars. And I went 4 stars on Daniel Garcia and the Beast Mortos. And then Collision was a very strong show with, I thought they had 3 notebook matches on that, on the lower end, but Briscoe and Garcia, I went 4.25, and then I had a couple 4 stars for Darby and Commander and Okada and Fletcher, and I also thought Deeb and Willow had a nice 3.5-star match. And then Dynamite, I pretty much liked the first hour of the show, and then the second hour was 2 pretty good matches and then some bad angles.
Yeah, what the hell was up with that private party bullshit?
Oh, that sucked. That one was bad, and I thought the Mercedes Moné Anna Jay angle was not good. But I thought the private party angle was easily the worst on the show. And I'm not into this Jericho New York Minute thing. You're not getting like anything close to Jericho's best work there. And Matt Cardona's promo was all right. I don't think it was bad by any stretch. I don't think it was like, you know, asses and seats or anything. But I separated the show because I got to watch like the first hour and then had to do other stuff on Wednesday night. And then I finished it off this morning. And that was a decision that I made. really unfortunate, because I just thought that second hour was kind of, I liked the Continental Classic match, the Ricochet Brody match. I was hoping for a little better, but I still thought it was good. I gave it 3.75. And I don't think Mina and Mariah May, I thought it was pretty good, but it wasn't really what I would like recommend to anyone as a must watch match or anything approaching that. 3.25 on that. I think Adam Cole, I don't know what you do with Adam Cole right now. And it would be very un AEW to like just outright give up on him, because we know that they stick to their ideas for better or worse. And recently it's been a bit, fair bit more worse, I think, of those two. But this match with Kyle O'Reilly was like really average-ish. And like, you should be doing much better than that with Kyle O'Reilly, I think, in 2024.
I hated it, man. I thought it sucked.
Yeah, like, that's totally fair.
The idea of Kyle O'Reilly rocks. I love it. It's, I don't know what it is, man. It's just,
the storyline sucks to begin with.
Yeah.
MJF's too dangerous. We're all going to get injured is like not a babyface argument. And like maybe they're turning Kyle, you know, because, you know, as part of that. But I don't think that's really like putting the wind in his sails. You know, it's not making him come across as strong in any particular kind of way. Adam Cole's performances have been very mediocre. Was this the first time MJF's actually been in front of the camera in AEW for outside of like the pay-per-view match as far as TV for like months? Because it feels like that.
Yeah, because he went away after the World's End match against Garcia to go do some filming. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And
Happy Gilmore too.
Which I'm fascinated to see how that looks. It's almost 30 years later.
It's going to be weird. But it's also a very modern Hollywood move to have a sequel for that. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. This story just has no juice. It's really, like, I think this Dynamite really had a big vibe of just how cold this company is right now, which they are. And I like the opening tag. It was pretty good with Mox and Pac against Jay White and Orange Cassidy, but then you had the kind of weak finish with Adam Page running in that felt like they booked a match and didn't want to have a finish for it, so they just went with that, which is a very WWE style, like bad WWE style booking. Ospreay and Claudio was quite good, 4 stars, but like, if you're for a first time Claudio Ospreay match,
like that sucked.
That, you know, relatively speaking, you know, yeah.
When you add the context in it, that match sucked.
Yeah,
and it should have ruled. It should
if two dudes, if I pulled up like a Dreamwave show or something and two dudes had a match of that quality, I'd be like, oh man, these guys are good. I'm going to have to keep an eye on them. Claudio and Will having that match, like, it's a great match. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you're told, hey, we got Will and Claudio having their first match, like, you know, that's a disappointment of a match.
Yeah,
the expectations were so high on my end, and they did not really come close to meeting it.
My expectations were low, and I was still let down. That line is just kind of how I feel in general. Like, I had expectations that this could be really good, but I also didn't expect it to be really good. But I still expect it better than what we got, because look, it's a 20-minute television match, even if it's supposed to be like a G1 style. There's only so much you can do within the constraints of American television wrestling. Like, you have to work around a commercial break and you have to do some of this.
Oh, sure. But AEW has a long history of having great TV matches.
You know what? I'm getting there.
Get there.
They still could have had so much better
Yeah.
And it just felt so deflating and disappointing. And it's kind of the epitome of where this company is right now. They're like, you can rely on the pay-per-views to be really good. You can rely on the big stars to not have a bad match, but to only pull a flat four from Will Ospreay when you are Claudio Castagnoli.
These two should have been way better, but
it should have been 4.5 as the floor.
You would expect.
They should have woken up, yawned, put on their slippers, taken a shit, and that would have been 4.5 stars.
Yeah, these guys are just really fantastic workers, and it was surprising how. I mean, again, it was a great match. Let's not kid ourselves, but still, it was.
Great relative match, and when you talk about wrestling as a whole,
exactly with these two, yeah, it's a letdown. Now that said, I'm just jumping around a little bit since we're just kind of talking C2. Commander's having himself a nice little stretch. It is very noteworthy, I think, that when the whole Phoenix thing went down, it was about the time we heard a report that AEW was extremely happy with the work of Commander. And I mean, I think his Rampage match with Ricochet was fantastic. Like I said earlier, I think it's actually been the best match of the C2 so far. And I thought he had a very good, but not nearly as good. Like I'd put the Darby Allin Commander match on the same level as Claudio and Ospreay from Collision. That's interesting in several ways. Once more, the Windhurst fingers come out. Now, why would they say that? I thought the show had some good stuff in it, and I thought that was a pretty good FTR promo that they cut about the Asheville show. And kind of calling out the Death Riders to have a face-to-face after the whole thing with on Collision, where they attempted to murder Darby Allin, or I'm sorry, Orange Cassidy, my apologies, by pouring liquid cleaner down his throat again. I guess they bought that Gatorade in bulk. Another weird thing from this Dynamite, Thunder Rosa in that main event in the crowd holding up signs. I don't know where that's going to go. Obviously, it's pretty early, so we'll see. I didn't get like instant this is getting over vibes, but it's very early, so let's not get too excited right now.
It's just kind of the tone and how you said that is just how we feel about the company as a whole. It's like watching that kid in school who is just a class clown, but they have an IQ of 160 and do nothing to apply themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what AEW has become. You have this great blueprint, and it's just not being utilized. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, this is a company that, I think you can very much trace their 2023 portion of the decline to moving away from what had made them successful, in part of the decline because of this. And I think we're still getting a lot of like WWE-ish stuff in here, and that's rather consistently my least favorite part of the shows. Like this Mercedes Moné stuff is almost always like straight out of, WWE style writing. And I think she has been a major disappointment this year. And I'd hope that they would figure out a better way to use her at some point. But we're still waiting on that. I thought that Private Party segment was pretty atrocious. No one came off well, and there were 7 people involved, which is an accomplishment. I mean, it's not a good one, but it is an accomplishment. I thought the Darby promo was good. I will give him credit for that. Ricochet and Brody was pretty good. I think another one that you could have reasonably hoped for a little better match, but
I do have one thing I want to talk about. Brody King rules.
He does rule. They should push him more.
I really enjoyed the Ricochet match. I went 4.25.
I went 3.75. I thought it was good.
I thought this was the best match on the show.
Fair enough.
Like my absolute favorite thing in pro wrestling, other than a really good like one count kick out when it's done properly, like when Ishii will do it, or Omega doing it against Ospreay after hitting him with the one winged angel, is when a big man, like a small guy, like does like a cross body or a shoulder block to him, and then he just leans into him and just pops him with
a shoulder or something.
Just a complete no sell bully move. Like, oh, this Brody King needs to be pushed to the absolute moon. I think I said this in real time about Lance Archer early in this company. I thought they should have considered giving him a short title run. Now, I won't argue that how they built the title early on, Jericho first, then Moxley, like they did a great job of establishing that title with those first four reigns. I wouldn't change it. But how Lance Archer came off, how he looked, how he handled everything, man, it would have been sick to see him get a run with that belt as the Murder Hawk Monster. That would have been really cool. But also, it's fine if you don't. A TNT run would be fun, where he just goes in there and beats a bunch of jabronis every single week. Like,
yeah,
you remember when TNA introduced their television championship and D-Von Dudley won the belt, and he's like, oh, I'm going to be a fighting champion. I'm going to defend this every single week. How great would it have been to see Lance Archer every single week just defending it against some little pipsqueak from the local wrestling school and just throw him around the ring?
Yeah.
I would want to do those kind of things with Brody King because he's so incredibly charismatic. He's so dynamic in the ring. And his matches with Darby Allin are among some of my favorites in the history of the company. I was alive at the coffin match at Quake at the Lake in Minneapolis. When he choked out Darby Allin was one of the cooler moments in Dynamite history. That's another thing. I'm going to shift away from this. I can't remember what it was right after. And I don't know if this was on the TNT broadcast, but it's for sure on the fight feed, which is what I watch. I think it was Tony Schiavone. That's a Dynamite moment, baby. I can't remember what it was after, but I'm like, no, we aren't doing this. No, 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 no. That's worrisome.
I'm going to say I've been down on Schiavone's work the past few months as an announcer. I think he's a little overextended to be the lead guy on Collision. And I think AEW's announced a situation they could use a shake up, I think. I think Excalibur is a good announcer. I know that some people really disagree. I think he does a pretty good job as a play-by-play guy. I think, boy, Odie's going to town on that dream or whatever's going on in the background there with you.
That
is a hell of a store.
Well, there's Odie.
What a dog.
He's a Frenchie. Frenchie snore. I'll just make sure I mute. You know what? It's actually good ambiance.
It's fine. Who cares? I'm a shut down full cast fan. Why would I ever care about audio quality? I enjoy Excalibur. I like Tony as like the happy uncle in the announce table. I think Callis does a good job when he's out there. I think I like Daddy Magic and I enjoy Taz, but I just think they need to shake it up. You know, I'd like to see Ian Riccoboni with one of the major shows. I'd be more than happy if they had paired him with like Caprice Coleman to call Collision. You know, maybe move some guys around some. I just think that'd be a lot preferable, frankly.
yeah,
to the current situation.
It's, there's just so much going on with this company and so much of it that's not good. And
yeah,
it's hard to give these guys the benefit of the doubt anymore.
My biggest concern with how they're addressing things is that they really are super committed to what they're doing, which is an admirable quality. You don't want them doing the like late teens Vince McMahon thing of like panic booking everything, because that would be bad. That's really terrible writing. But I think when you have something like Adam Cole clearly failing right now, or flailing, whichever would be a more, depending on your point of view, I just think he's been really disappointing in this return. I think you need to change plans at some point. Like, it needs to be clear that an MJF Adam Cole storyline not only isn't over, but one of the performers just does not look good on a weekly basis and has been extremely underwhelming. And they just haven't adjusted to that, and that's weird. And, you know, continuing to use Mercedes Moné in this way is very odd. You know, like, you would think that at some point they'd have had a heart-to-heart and been like, Mercedes, we need to change the way you're being utilized. We need to find a way for you to feel, you know, to deliver better talking segments. Match quality, you know, she just had the Statlander match, so that's, you know, that was a good one. But I think in general, her ring work has been underwhelming more often than not. And I don't know. I just wish, I think that's a flaw with Tony Khan, is his commitment to doing something once he started doing it. And you need to have some flexibility. I think no one would have complained if they never went back to the, you know, the whole Adam Cole and MJF hate each other thing, or at least didn't do a proper storyline this year when Adam Cole came back. And it's interesting to me that they're still going down that path when Adam Cole has looked bad. So, I don't know. It's a frustrating company. That's a very frustrating part. I think the Continental Classic has been good. But I think it's been a big letdown versus last year's. I don't know. It's very interesting that I don't feel like anyone's really pushing to have killer matches. And given guys that are in this, that were in it last year, that had very good matches, I just don't know. It's weird. It's a very weird situation, and I don't have a clear solution, but... yeah. Anyways,
I don't have a clear solution either. I don't think there is a clear solution. What they need to do is get back to the basics of putting on a good television wrestling show. And honestly, they should utilize the fact that all the back catalog of Dynamite is going to go on Max at the beginning of the year. They should start watching what made the show special to begin with. You have really good matches. You have simple pro wrestling stories that you add a lot of layers to, and you let them play out over a course of time, and boom. Like, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. You don't need to do anything like super special. Basic pro wrestling stories rock, and you can add layers to them to make them special. You can add complexities, but just get back to what you used to do. And then grow on it. You don't need 20 plus people in the room. Tony Khan said there's 27 people in the room. Why? Why? Fred, you are muted.
I forgot where I muted myself. I think the 27 number is just like I'm throwing a number out thing that he did. The show needs to get its stuff together. It's very frustrating for just how middling it is at points. Like, it's a good show, really. I mean, I shouldn't say it's middling, but the storylines are often disappointing. I am underwhelmed by where we are with the you know, what they've done with the Death Rider stuff. That feels very middle of the road, and I'm just frustrated with the company right now. And they need, you know, it's obvious that things are not going well. All their business metrics are really struggling for the most part. And, you know, it feels like they don't feel any urgency to address it, which is bizarre.
Very bizarre. And I do think we need to talk about one more thing before we go here today, Fred. After Mariah May got the pin on Mina Shirakawa, which I do appreciate the fact that this kind of turned into a little bit of a blood feud. And right at the bell, they just went right after each other. I always appreciate those little touches. But after the match, you get the return of Toni Storm. Not Timeless Toni. Badass Toni is back. And she got a great pop when her old music came on and she came out. And you could tell, like, her, like, the way she looked, her expression, her eyes. She was kind of glowing and absorbing it all in. And I could not tell if it was a true death to Timeless Toni and she's just kind of playing like another character in that kind of realm, or if this is just a return and we're just back to what Toni Storm used to be. And she
Go ahead. I was going to say, I'm going to drop weekend spoilers from Meltzer. So if you care about that, this is pretty much going to be the last thing we talk about on the show this week, right, Tyler?
Yep.
Okay. So if you care about that, just pause the show, come back to us later when you get to watch the stuff. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Meltzer's reporting from what he heard from people at the show, as we'll see how accurate this comes out to be, is that his impression is that Toni Storm is going to be doing a something of an amnesia gimmick, where it's like the Timeless stuff never happened, and she is coming in and has kind of forgotten that she was Timeless Toni. And, you know, apparently after her collision match, she said on the mic, "I never thought I'd get to say this, but Toni Storm is officially All Elite." And that on Rampage, she teased, being Timeless Toni, I guess, before finishing the match against Harley Cameron. Which, if that's the case, I'm out. you know, we've talked about our ups and downs of the Timeless Toni stuff, but I think an underrated part of this company that has really struggled is that both of their women's championships have been wrapped up in this heavy gimmickry, I think. And I just want to see good wrestling. And it'd be nice just to see, like, Willow Nightingale having good matches with one of those belts, at least. Or Toni Storm, like we know she can. You know, doing what she can do, but...
Man, what the f- Oh, if that's really what they're going to do.
I mean, we'll see. That's going to, you know, obviously, but that is what Meltzer wrote in this week's Observer.
Okay. That's our show.
Doesn't really appeal to me. I'll say that. That'll be me being nice.
No, it doesn't appeal to me either. With that said, thank you guys so much for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, do all the fun things. Show support to the rest of the podcast here on this great network.
We're going to take next week off, I think, for the holidays, and then take a look at the week after. We'll figure it out. We'll do a show at some point. Oh, also, I do have one plug. The lovely Alan Farrell had me on his podcast on PW Torch. What's on the telly? We watched two mid-90s episodes of Lucha Libre, one from CMLL, one from AAA. Both were great shows. And I strongly recommend checking it out because Alan Farrell is a great guy and a lovely person to talk with. Had a great time, and check it out.
That rules. Alan Farrell rocks.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. That'll be it. Check that out. Check out all my Vikings work.
How are the Vikings? Do you have anything you want to talk about with the Viking stuff?
Dog, they're 11-2 and still probably won't win the division.
Fantastic.
The Lions are a juggernaut, but the Vikings played the Lions better than any team in the league. They held the lead late in the fourth quarter, and it took a field goal with 15 seconds left to beat them. So,
do you want to do like 5 minutes of college football talk real quick?
Yes. Hey, I'm victory lapping your ass, Fred.
What are you victory lapping my ass for?
Alabama didn't make the playoff, and they shouldn't have.
I just said that they were as qualified as anyone else. It felt like they were going to get in, assuming Clemson didn't win. Clemson won. They didn't get in. I'm glad that they put SMU above Bama. I actually did not trust them to do that.
I didn't either, but it's what to me was the funniest thing was the reaction was, well, why in the world would the SEC ever schedule a hard out of conference game ever again? All three
they
Bama
lost to Vandy
conference.
Their worst losses were to Vandy, and then even worse this year, which is hilarious to say. They got spanked by a not good Oklahoma team.
They didn't just get spanked. They
it was
got
embarrassing.
They got railroaded.
Yeah.
I will say it was a very motivated Oklahoma team, kind of in a little bit of defense. But even so, you have to show
even
up.
Even so, you got to score more than, what was it, 3 points or 10? I can't remember offhand.
Brent Venables, the head coach of Oklahoma, announced that his wife was dealing with a relapse of cancer. And
that's a bummer.
The whole team basically showed out to play for him, yeah. Which you don't want that situation to ever happen. But it's one of those kind of heartwarming moments where, okay, that's cool. Like, the team shows out for the head coach, that rocks. But, yeah. Man,
you
want to make the playoff, win your games.
Yeah. You got to. If you're Bama, you have to take care of business in that situation.
If you lose to Tennessee, and even if you lose to Vandy, if you're 10-2, you beat Oklahoma, you're
they get
in.
They get
no,
in.
No questions problem. Asked. You're yeah. in.
The idea that, like, when they leaked the, oh, we can't do the tough out of conference scheduling. First of all, college football, they schedule their games like a decade ahead of time. So chill with that. And the Alabama, you know, out of conference slate was Western Kentucky at home, South Florida at home, where they struggled mightily in the first half. They went on the road to a not good Wisconsin team. Now, Wisconsin was good when they signed that contract probably 10 years ago, but still. And then they hosted Mercer. Wow.
I'll give them a little bit of a break with the Wisconsin one because that's obviously an attempt. Because
sure,
Wisconsin's a perennial 9-10 win team in the Big Ten, like. But then they hired Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell decided to go air raid, which was a humongous mistake. And that school's going to be paying for it for years because the whole idea of Wisconsin is, well, we can't recruit these high-end kids. Let's play power football.
Yeah, they did the Iowa thing. Boys.
Yeah, you have to. Minnesota kind of does that to an extent, but they like running out of the shotgun instead of like a true power eye. They love to run the football, though. So it's just baffling that
the Bill Belichick thing is fascinating to UNC, especially because it got UNC to apparently actually do NIL stuff for football, which they previously were not. And there's been a ton of ink spilled on this. I'm not going to focus on it for too long, but I didn't think it was going to happen until like it actually happened. And it is very funny that his contract gives him a $1 million buyout starting, I think it's June 1st or is it July 1st? Which of those?
Either way,
it's such a weird date, you know. But ignoring all that, I think the really weird move in terms of hiring is WVU going back to the Rich Rodriguez well.
Oh, I love that. I love it so much.
Well, you would because you're a pervert for what he was doing at Jacksonville.
I'm a pervert for what he did at West Virginia 20
years
ago. Yeah,
but you know, Steve Slayton ain't walking through those doors. Pat White ain't walking through those doors.
No, but
I don't know.
Find another Owen Schmidt.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that. Owen Schmidt was definitely one of a kind. I just don't know how that's going to work out. The retread thing. And Scott Frost at UCF, too. I nearly forgot about that. Just some really weird coaching moves this year in a market that is very quiet compared to usual. You know?
Honestly, it was a bad coaching market. A bad one. I mean, Dan Mullen got hired by UNLV, which I actually think is a good hire, because Mullen's biggest issue at Florida was he didn't want to recruit.
Yeah.
You don't really have to recruit at UNLV. People will come to you because you're in fucking Vegas. You play in an NFL facility.
I don't know about that. I think you're a little optimistic there.
It's so much less stress. Florida, high stress. You better win at Florida. Mississippi State, he could, if he won 7-8 games, he was in a gold mine.
I mean, UNLV is going to have expectations now, though, to some extent. You know, not Florida extent, but still, you know. I mean, they've been doing pretty well. I think they would like to continue that. One more thing here. I think it's kind of hard to tell with all the transfers and everything, but outside of the playoff, which bowl game do you think are you most intrigued by?
A couple of them. After the two that stood out to me were the Hawaii Bowl and the Holiday Bowl. I am going to go in and tell you who's playing in those games.
Holiday Bowl is on the 27th. That's Syracuse, Washington State.
Yeah, that could be real good.
And Hawaii Bowl is South Florida and San Jose State on the 24th.
San Jose State is one, fun as hell. Two, South Florida, when they have their quarterback, Byron Brown, I think is his name. He can scoot and he's got a whip. Like, he can do some things, like potential NFL prospect if he kind of puts it all together. Like, those look really interesting. I think the Guaranteed Rate Bowl between Rutgers and Kansas State could be really good, because they're just both running football teams and they're just going to run right at each other. I think that could be really interesting. Oklahoma Navy could be fun because Navy rules.
You know what's really interesting about that Cure Bowl, as I just put this together, the Cure Bowl, I'm sorry, I realized you said the Rate Bowl, but the Cure Bowl is very interesting because Ohio has literally no one transferring out of their program after their head coach was poached.
Yeah, but why would you want to, like, technically, like, Charlotte's a downgrade from the Ohio job.
He's getting paid better, I do know that much. But anyways, I think the most important point, as I wrap this up real quick, just to so we can get out of here, is that next year there is a distinct possibility that Bill Belichick will be taking a Mayo bath.
I know. Isn't that great? The Pop-Tarts Bowl could be interesting. Iowa State, Miami. One that's kind of grimy, but like in a this might be fun way, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl between Miami of Ohio and Colorado State. Like, that's a grimy kind of game that could be really interesting. BYU Colorado in the Alamo Bowl has a chance to be good. Marshall Army, if Marshall makes the game, because people are already making jokes that Marshall may lose their football team again. Because obviously there was the plane crash in the 70s. But the big thing with Marshall is that Marshall basically hated their outspoken head coach, Charles Huff, who left to go to Southern Miss.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole team's thinking of entering the portal.
Oh, my God. That is a wacky situation. I could talk about the Marshall thing. Real quick, who's your pick for the national title?
I filled out a bracket. I did pick Georgia. I don't like it, especially now with Carson Beck being out. I actually may go back and change it. But Georgia just understands how to play in these games. They have a relatively easy path to the national championship game. And I don't care how good of a quarterback Dylan Gabriel may appear in college. I don't want to rely on that guy to win me a national championship. Like, I did say on the College Football Intelligentsia on the flagship Voice of Wrestling flagship Patreon that Texas would win the national championship, but it would only be because Arch Manning replaced Quinn Ewers. If that comes to fruition, I'm going to take the biggest victory lap of all time.
Well, I don't think it was a particularly brave call, but well, the title at least. Arch Manning, you know, hasn't happened yet, but we'll see.
Nope, it hasn't. But I said that, what, it would have been like August 30th, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe 29, something like that. So it's been a hot minute since I said that. But there are some really interesting games, some kind of weird ones. The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, Louisville, Washington could be fun. North Texas, Texas State, and the First Responder Bowl, 4 p.m. Eastern, Friday, June 3rd. And then the Duke's Mayo Bowl is the primetime game that night. There are some interesting ones here. I'm kind of I'm excited for bowl season.
Yeah, it should be fun. All right, I'll let you get out of here. Y'all have a great week. Talk to you soon. Happy
Merry
holidays.
Christmas, happy holidays. Enjoy time with your snoring dogs.
Take care, y'all.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.